It's that time of year again. Everyone knows that the holidays can quickly become overwhelming. So the sooner that you get things done, the better. Both shoppers and businesses, the best time to score great deals during the holidays is Black Friday, Cyber Monday weekend. So if you have a product to sell, you need to make sure you're ready for anything that comes your way during the busiest weekend of the year. And that's why you need Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Don't let your brand's voice get lost in the thousands of messages consumers will be seeing. Shopify's marketing tools will help push your brand to the forefront of the chaos, no matter what platform your customers are on. If you want to give customers the best experience possible this holiday season, you need Shopify. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. This Black Friday, join the thousands of new entrepreneurs hearing for the first time with Shopify. Sign up for your free trial today at shopify.com/inspirational. That's shopify.com/inspirational. Go to shopify.com/inspirational to make this Black Friday one to remember. Welcome to the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from Campfires and Guideposts by Henry Van Dyke, published in 1921. It is a curious fact that there is no good guidebook to authorship. There are, of course, lots of self-portraits of authors at work, and there are many essays upon the craft of writing in general. The best of these portraits and advice are excellent reading, full of entertainment and instruction for the alert and candid mind, and touched with a special, sympathetic interest for those young persons who have sternly resolved or fondly dreamed that they will follow a literary career. A volume of carefully selected material of this kind might be made attractive and rewarding to readers who wish to be authors. But the one thing which such a book ought not to be mistaken for is a manual for the profession of writing literature. Why not? Well, the answer is an open secret. An instructive paradox. Because there is no certain pathway to authorship. It is a voyage, if you like, but there are no guideposts in the sea. It is a flight, if you like, but there are no tracks in the air. It is certainly not a journey along a railway line, or a highway, or even a well-marked trail. In this, it differs from other vocations like the bar, engineering, medicine, or accounting. For each of these, there is a pretty clear defined path of preparatory study, with fixed gateways of examination along its course. When the last gate is passed and the young doctor is licensed to practice, the young lawyer admitted to the bar, the accountant certified to crunch numbers, the path broadens into a road, which leads from one professional duty to another, with the regularity of a timetable, and it must be added, with something of the monotony of a clock. It is not so with the young person intending to be an author. There is no time of preparation prescribed, or even authoritatively advised, for the would-be writer. There are no fierce examiners standing like lions in the way. No hard-earned diploma or certificate or license is demanded. There are no set duties to be performed at certain times, like a case to be argued at the first session of the court in November,
or an appendix to be removed next Thursday afternoon. Would-be authors, and for that matter practicing authors, are like Milton's Adam and Eve when the gate of paradise closed behind them. The world was all before them. Where to choose? It looks very easy and attractive, this vocation of writing books. The novice writer often imagines that all they have to do is provide themselves with paper and pen, or a keyboard, retire into a convenient room, and a little while later emerge with a book to send to a publisher who will print, advertise, and sell it, and which the public will read. And after that? Why, after that, it looks freer and easier still. All that the successful writer has to do is to repeat the process with a new book at any convenient season. But this very freedom, so alluring at a distance, becomes bewildering and troublesome at close range. The fledgling author who has serious ambition and a working mind very soon recognizes, either by the light of pure reason or by the glimmer of sad experience, that there are difficulties in this simple business of writing books, which publishers will desire to print, and the public will want to read. Many manuscripts are offered, but few are chosen. How does one learn to cope with these difficulties and overcome them? How does one produce a manuscript that shall be reasonably sure of a place among the chosen few? By going to college or by travel? By living in solitude or in society? By imitating select models or by cultivating originality? By reading Plato or the Writer's Digest? Nobody seems to know the right answer to these questions. Guesses are made at them. Universities develop creative writing programs to teach the secrets of writing poetry and novels. But the results produced by such programs are spotty at best, and not consistent enough to be regarded as inevitable. Indeed, it is not unfair to say that many of these programs are more in the business of producing creative writing teachers rather than working professional authors. Meanwhile, travel does not guarantee an observing mind, nor solitude a profound one, nor does society always refine the intelligence. The strenuous effort to be original often ends in a very common type of folly. And while conscious imitation may be the sincerest flattery, it rarely produces the closest resemblance. However, a sufficient number of authors, great and small, do continue to arrive, as they always have, from their native regions, by their own ways. Ask them how they got there, and they cannot tell you, even when they try to do so. The reason is because they do not know. There was no pathway. They traveled as they could. Power and skill came to them, sometimes suddenly, sometimes slowly, always inexplicably. Do you suppose it is possible to explain how Shakespeare became able to write Hamlet, or Milton to compose Paradise Lost? It is true that George Eliot describes how she came to write fiction, and Robert Louis Stevenson gives an entertaining sketch of some of the methods in which he pursued his ambition to become a writer. But does George Eliot herself understand the secret of her preparation to create her vivid, revealing scenes from clerical life? Or will the study of those favorite authors to whom Stevenson says he carefully imitated enable the young short storyteller to reproduce Stevens' legendary style? In the middle of the 19th century, there were several learned, industrious, and wise Americans delivering lectures. why did Emerson's lectures crystallize into such unforgettable essays? Where did Hawthorne learn how to write the Scarlet Letter? In Bowdoin College or in the Salem Custom House? Could Thackeray have told you how he found the way from The Luck of Barry Lyndon to Vanity Fair? Or Dickens from Sketches by Boz to Pickwick Papers? There is no other vocation into which the unknown quantity enters as largely as it does into authorship. And almost all writers who have won fame, even to a modest degree, if they are thoroughly honest, will confess to a not unpleasant experience of surprise at their own success. All of this suggests an element of uncertainty in the author's profession, if indeed a vocation so pathless may be called a profession at all. In the regular and, so to speak, macadamized professions, those who follow the road with energy, fidelity, and a fair intelligence may count upon a reasonable reward. But in the open field of literature, it is impossible to foretell which one of a thousand aspirants will come to fame, or which 10 will be able to earn a living. It is for this reason, no doubt, that some instinct of prudence, or some pressure of necessity, has made many authors provide themselves with another breadwinner than the pen. When we consider how many well-known, and even famous writers, from Chaucer to Conan Doyle, have had some avocation besides writing, we may justly conclude that there is hardly any human occupation, from diplomacy to doctoring, in which the intending author may not learn to write, and from which genius, or even talent, may not find a passage into literature. Charles Lamb's labor as a clerk in the East India House did not dim the luminous wit of his essays. William De Morgan's long life as a manufacturer of tiles did not prevent him at last from making his novels, quote, somehow good. The career of James Ford Rhodes as an ironmaster was no bar to his notable success as a historian. Indeed, it almost seems as if some useful occupation, or at least some favorite recreation or pursuit, which brings the writer into unprofessional contact with the realities of life and the personalities of other people, may be more of a help than a hindrance to vital authorship. Writing in itself is not an especially interesting or picturesque employment. Romance can make a little of it, even when the hero of a novel is a literary person, like David Copperfield. The things that interest us most happen to him outside of the writing room. It is what lies behind writing, and leads up to it, and flows into it, that really counts. I think it was Byron who said something like this: the moment in which a poem is conceived is one of infinite pleasure, but the hours that brought it forth are full of the pains of labor. Of course, I do not mean to deny that the author's vocation has its own inward delight and its own exceeding great reward. The delight lies in the conception of something that craves utterance, and the reward lies in the production of something that goes out alive into the world. A true call to the vocation of literature is both inward and outward, a strong desire of self-expression, and a proven power of communicating thought and feeling through the written word. The wish to write, merely for the sake of being a writer, is rather a small and futile thing, and seldom leads to happiness, usefulness, or greatness. Literature has been made by men and women who became writers because they had something to say and took the necessary pains to learn how to say it. But how did this happen to these men and women? What brought them to this happy point where the inward call to self-expression was confirmed by the outward power to interest readers? Who can tell? It looks simple, and no doubt there is a certain element of simplicity in the necessary processes of learning to spell, to construct sentences, to use words correctly, to develop plots, to recognize rhymes, and to observe rhythm. But there is a mystery in it after all. From Shakespeare's deepest tragedy to Kipling's most rattling ditty, from Wordsworth's loftiest ode to Dobson's lightest lyric, from Victor Hugo's biggest romance to De Maupassant's briefest tale, from Plato's profoundest dialogue to Chesterton's most paradoxical monologue, from George Eliot's Romola to Miss Alcott's Little Women, every bit of literature, great or small, has a measure of magic in it, and ultimately is no more explicable than life itself.